Hello, HR professionals. Good news. This episode of the Great Retention Podcast is valid for 0.5 professional development credits towards SHRM CP, SHRM SCP, and HRCI recertification. Stay tuned to access your certification code.
Great organizations have individuals in them who really love what they're doing. That love is not about I love going out after work, or I love hanging out with my teammates on the weekend. It's about the engagement and the actual activity of the work that they're doing every day and finding a way to be passionate about it. And I think it's an obligation as a leader to help individuals find that love.
Welcome to The Great Retention, a show spotlighting leaders who've built award-winning cultures where people feel empowered, seen, and recognized.
Today, we'll be learning from Mike Nolte, who serves as the CEO of Uprise Health, a leader in digital mental health technology and services for employers. He's a veteran industry leader in healthcare software and services with a 30-year career spanning marketing, product, and business leadership across several healthcare industry segments. John Duesberg sits down with Mike to help us learn more about how employee assistance programs have traditionally worked and how Uprise Health has leveraged innovative technology to make it better to meet the rising concerns around mental health in the workplace. The way in which Uprise Health has grown its distributed team through the pandemic and built its culture around purposeful engagement and a unified purpose, as well as some fundamental lessons learned that will equip us all to be better leaders that communicate with clarity and motivate our team members around their unique passions and a central mission as a force multiplier. All right, let's jump right into this content with Mike Nolte. Over to you, John.
So Mike, thank you so much for being on The Great Retention today. I'm super excited to get into it and pick your brain and hear about all these insights that you've experienced at Uprise Health. So thank you for being here.
No, thanks. Thanks, John. Happy to be here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, want to just jump right in. So maybe start with brief intro, but tell us a little bit about the why, the purpose behind Uprise Health, and kind of also for the audience, give us a little picture, you know, how many employees roughly do you have now, locations and so forth?
Yeah, so Uprise Health is a digital mental health business, largely focused on employers in the US. And we essentially provide services and technology that help with employees as a benefit, you know, alongside their health benefits and, you know, the rest of their benefits package that support everything from somebody who's having just a difficult challenge at work where they might need some coaching or some education, the ability to go look at a class to see how to deal with a difficult situation at work or a boss that's doing something that's upsetting you.
Right, right.
All the way to employees who are actually in crisis where they may have suicidal thoughts or be in severe depression or be having a real struggle, whether it's at home or at work, that they need assistance with. And so we provide a whole range of benefits that support that continuum. And then at the same time, technology and tools that can actually help drive success around the root cause. So if you're having legal problems, as an example, we have ways that you can access legal services, or bill payment is another one where if you're having financial difficulties, you might have the ability to access a solution as opposed to, just the mental health implications of it.
Got it.
And then as a business, we're relatively small, you know, 270 employees, mostly U.S.-based across three major offices, although we're not using most of that office space at the moment.
Right.
And then a handful of offshore employees that are mostly in Eastern Europe, centered, believe it or not, in the Ukraine, which obviously is pretty topical recently. So
Yeah, for sure. And I'm a little familiar with the employee assistance program kind of space, but how is Uprise Health different than, let's say, your traditional EAP?
So the challenge with traditional EAPs is that it tends to be a crisis management tool, right? So it's the second part of what I described. So somebody's got a severe issue, they're having a mental health challenge, they really need to talk to somebody. And it's typically an 800 number that's kind of in a footnote in the bottom of your benefits package. And a lot of people don't even know they have it as a benefit.
Right. And
somebody's calling usually in a crisis for themselves or for a family member. Our belief is that technology creates the ability to drive more of an ongoing conversation around mental health. And so it allows you to access solutions and services well before you might have a significant issue. And also enables us to have an ongoing dialogue. Another issue with traditional EAP is that if you do refer somebody to a mental health professional, as an example, you know, somebody with severe depression, just as one example, you often lose touch with them, right? So you refer them, and then you kind of don't know what happens, because often those third party providers don't work for our business and any EAP business traditionally. Yeah. Whereas with technology, we have the ability to keep in touch with them and understand, you know, did they get the services that they need, and ultimately did the work to go see a provider in the first place actually help? Did they get some, hopefully some significant benefit?
Yeah, out. Yeah, so, got it. Yeah, I mean, and what I hear from a lot of leaders is that mental health is top of mind.
Yeah, for
employees right now, especially going through this pandemic,
everyone,
working remote in a lot of cases.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons why we use technology is fundamentally to solve that issue. What's happened in the last several years, really a couple things. It's the pandemic, but before that, there was a substance abuse crisis right around the opioid epidemic. And both of those things have increased the amount of demand for mental health services. And simultaneously, essentially, nothing's happened to supply. You know, there's not really a big difference in number of providers, number of access points, no real change in the way those services are provided. And so, again, technology and our approach helps to level the playing field a little bit and help alleviate what ends up being a pretty big supply-demand mismatch.
Got it. Okay, no, that's helpful. So talk to me a little bit about the culture at Uprise Health.
Sure.
Right? And I have to believe that one of the reasons I'm there is because I want to help people mm-hmm. who are in this yep. situation, right? And that's fulfilling. That's part of the why for me. But tell us a little about the culture. Kind of give us an overview of what that looks like.
Yeah, look, I mean, the culture at Uprise grew out of what essentially at one point were seven different acquisitions, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And you can imagine the challenges with trying to bring together legacy organizations. Honestly, it's part of the reason why we're Uprise Health. We grew out of a bunch of businesses with three-letter acronym names, which aren't worth describing, but grew into Uprise Health as a single brand, single approach, single business. So the first thing we try to do was unify the culture and the business. And look, it pivots off of four, you know, things that we focus on as a company, but those are really derived out of understanding the needs of the folks that we brought together in this business. And so they're not as fancy as maybe some of the credos you might have bumped into. Yeah. They're pretty simple at the end of the day. For us, it starts with over-communication. And that may be in part because of when we brought everybody together, which was in the middle of the pandemic. And sort of a crucial need for us was to work really hard at communicating, because we didn't have, people in an office environment. We didn't have those engagement opportunities, right? Running an all teams meeting from the day I started was remote, right? And so we worked really hard on trying to message and communicate. A second one was really about we call it collaborating courageously, but the idea that we were going to pivot around groups of people, whether they came from a legacy business or from a particular function, to help solve real problems. The third one for us was focused explicitly on simplification. What we talk about is simplify. And we've worked really hard to try to build a simple, effective business with an eye towards our customers. And then the last one is probably the one that, you'd get right away, as you said, which is we talk about taking it personally. And that's easy for the people that interact with our members every day. So if you're rubbing shoulders with somebody and you're helping them with a real problem, that's at one of our customers, then you get it, right? You understand the needs of somebody who's requiring mental health services. But, the guys and girls in, AP and AR in the finance team or, working on things that are a little bit more next level from touching base with customers every day, maybe don't feel it as much. And so we work really hard to have everybody understand that everything they do actually matters for the people that they're trying to help. And most importantly, those people could easily be their family members, somebody in their community, somebody that's their friend. Because we touch a lot of different kinds of employers across the U.S. And, there's no doubt that it wouldn't be that difficult to believe that you would rub shoulders with somebody that actually mattered to you personally, right?
Yeah, so, no, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, so as a leadership team, you coming into this organization, given the fact that you came in as a CEO,
sure,
remote,
yeah,
you, as
yeah,
a leadership team, you decided, hey, these are four principles that we're going to bring this culture together.
Kind around. Of. I mean, we actually didn't start with that. Okay. We started with an open mind about believing that we had to develop a single culture. So that was something we decided as a leadership team.
Okay.
But we actually asked people. We said, like, what are the things that would make the most difference to you in building a great business? What can we fix, in part, was what it really was. You know, what do you see as you've come together from a legacy organization, or frankly been here for 30 years in some cases, that we ought to be working on as a leadership team? And so the values really grew out of that. And we, you know, we massaged them and kind of simplified them.
So these are the core values.
Took them from, so we took them from eight possibilities down to four, right? Because we didn't want to have 50 of them. But we made them real to the people in our teams, because they're the ones who created them, right? We didn't we didn't sit around with, you know, six people
who
you in theory don't know any more than anybody else does and kind of develop some interesting words, right? That wasn't the approach we took at all.
Got it.
And so they're a little clunky, right? They're not as elegant as, I don't know, you've probably been a few places where you have these sort of long, very flowery, eloquent words.
But they're authentic, right?
Yeah, but they are absolutely authentic. Yeah, they came out of our business, right?
Okay, so over-communicate. You said collaborate courageously.
Yeah.
Simplify.
And take it personal.
Take it personal.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Okay, this is bringing these, I think you said seven or so organizations
Seven originally,
together.
I think it was technically four when I joined. Okay. Three of them had, in theory, come together.
But okay,
really
but good, so. Rallying together around this new brand, Uprise Health, set of four core values, right? And I like it. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, no, that's helpful. So now, okay, you're coming in. You know, you're trying to bring this one culture together.
Sure.
You know, you're getting feedback, getting buy-in around the authentic values. Yep. Love it. And then you have kind of this trend of the great resignation.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. So I'm curious, you know, what's your experience been? Has this had an impact on you?
Sure.
How have you navigated? Any experience you can share?
Yeah, I think one thing to highlight for us is there's a significant portion of our teams that have been there a really long time, and near as I can tell, will be there a very long time.
Okay. Yeah,
you know, this is a part of healthcare for sure, where people feel very committed to the roles that they have and the people that they serve, and they can see direct impact of what they do every day, and it makes what they do meaningful without me having to add a lot of meaning to it. You know what I mean?
Like,
I have to work really hard. Yes. And so what we've tried to do, right, and look, we've had increased turnover probably like everybody else has, but I think at a reduced rate for us for two reasons. One is that we have a significant portion of our employees who've always felt connected, still feel connected, and will continue to feel connected because of what they do in part. And then second is helping make that sense pervasive in the business, you know, helping other people see the meaning in what we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then look, the other thing we've tried to do is just be pragmatic, right? You know, we've thought about trying to bring people into the organization who understand our culture, fit what we're trying to do, and are there for something more than just, you know, activity or pay or role or whatever, right? And it's a hard thing to do. I mean, I listened to a great leader who's a friend talk about how you get from what he calls the 70% to the 100%. And in his view, there's any culture, you've got 70% of the people who sort of buy in. That, you know, they're part of the team. They wear the T-shirt. You know, they sort of got it, right?
Yeah.
And then you got another 30%, and, you know, obviously it could be 25 or 20. It just depends on the business. Who you got to kind of win over, right? That they're there in part to collect a paycheck, right? They view you as an employer, but not really as a place that they derive any additional meaning from. And so I think what we've tried to do as we've gone through this period of time is to work really hard at trying to make it clear what we stand for, why we do what we do, why we think it's important, why they should want to be there, and to help people kind of connect to what we're doing in a meaningful way.
Okay. So it's just reinforcing kind of that, making it personal across every role.
It is. It's personal. Well, I think it's all of the values, right? Yep. You know, if you want to be in a place where, as an example, right, you get left alone and you're not expected to think about how to improve a process or how to make the business better or how to see opportunities to drive value.
Yep.
This isn't the place for you, right?
Got it.
And we've tried to make that clear. You know, that's the simplification point, right? There are some additional words other than simplify, but if you want to be a clinician who just thinks about being a clinician every day, just seeing our members and not doing anything else, again, probably not the place for you, right? We're a little more like Southwest Airlines than Delta Airlines, as an example, right? We expect other things out of people than just their narrowly defined role. And so those are things that, you know, some people are on board with and some people are, you know, this isn't really for me and it's kind of hassle and it's not really where I want to be. And that's completely okay. Right. And so we see that as an opportunity to bring in people who want to be part of something that's a little bit different, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And we're actually okay with people who don't want to be there because if people are explicitly choosing our culture, right, it means we've defined something that's meaningful. Right?
Yeah.
And so for us, that's okay. Allowing somebody to make that choice, even at the very beginning of the hiring process, is in our view pretty powerful.
I really like what you just said. If someone is choosing your culture, you know, that's something meaningful to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe not always in a good way, but it's it's defined so that it's clear so that someone can make a binary choice whether they want to be there or not.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And just being upfront with that. Here's who we are. Here's why we exist. Yep. Here's our purpose.
Yep. And here's what you should expect, right? Don't be surprised, you know, again, when we ask you to do A, B, and C, because we think of everybody as having to do A, B, and C as part
of
what we do.
Got it. So, and you know, my understanding with Uprise Health is even before the pandemic, you had somewhat of a remote team.
Right? It was not all, we have never been particularly office centric.
Okay.
And had, you know, I would bet probably a third, maybe 40% of our employees who were already, you know, not working in a physical office.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, has this, you know, being able to put your values, your culture up front.
Yep.
Is that different in this remote world? And you know, how are you planning to move this forward? Are you are you thinking about coming back to the office? Are you going to continue remote? I'm just curious kind of what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, look, the development of culture is hard anyway, right? And not being able to rub shoulders with people and have them understand that, you know, you kind of mean what you say and being able to demonstrate it in what you do as a leader, and having them have the ability to observe the conversations that you have and the choices that you make, it makes it harder, right? Because I think people want to feel like you're the sort of video and the audio lineup, right? That, you know, if you say you're doing something, you actually do what you're saying, right?
Absolutely.
And I know that sounds a little trite, but I think that's real. You know, I worked in a small office here in Atlanta, my first CEO gig, and we had a completely open office, right? And so the people around me were, you know, on the phone talking to each other, you know, there was no place to hide, basically. And I would routinely have conversations on the phone, you know, sometimes, you know, I wasn't talking about somebody's performance review, but if it wasn't in need of being confidential, right? If there wasn't some direct, obvious reason why it had to be, I would have it in sort of the open floor. And I did that very deliberately not because I wanted to irritate people around me and make a bunch of noise, but because I felt like it was important for them to feel like they were part of the conversation. And they may just catch snippets of it, but you learn a lot by listening to how people talk to other people in a business, how they engage, you know, what they understand. And so, anyway, the point is you lose that too, right? You lose those moments where somebody can sort of observe you directly, yeah. and you're just sort of a face on video at best. Yeah. But despite that, as we're thinking about going back, I think the challenge for us is trying to understand going back to what, I think. And we look at like office space as an example completely differently than I think we would have done 3 years ago.
Okay.
We look at it as a place to create a platform for people to collaborate, and not necessarily a place that we're going to ever expect probably everyone to come to every day. Right. So, you know, almost like we almost look at office space. There's one next door, so it's kind of hilarious to say this, but like a WeWork, right? A place where, you know, different people are going to be in there different days. You know, they might use an office, but they might equally use collaboration space. And frankly, our office isn't really set up well to do what I think we're going to end up doing with the space that we have. Mm-hmm. But it's very unlikely we're going to see, you know, 100% of our teams come back, because the kind of work we do is pretty engaged and individual anyway.
Yep.
And so it doesn't have the same collaborative component or physical component that other businesses might find that need. So.
Got it. Yeah. I like what you said around making people feel that they're part of that conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And just kind of picking up on and that's hard to do when you're remote.
Yep.
Right.
It is.
And so I think that goes back to your point around the values: over communicate,
yep.
collaborate courageously, yep. right? Always keeping it simple and making it personal. Right.
Yep.
So it's all, the dots are kind of connecting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, we're, so. You know, hopefully it makes,
I'm taking notes.
It makes sense to me. Yeah. Oh, you know, there's maybe 269 other people that are still confused. Okay, you know,
so hopefully. So, you know, with the great retention,
yeah.
one of the goals that we have is to share lessons learned with other leaders,
yeah.
right? So other leaders who, you know, they might be looking at these same situation. They're thinking about going back or yeah. hybrid. And
sure.
so are there, you know, specific, you know, practical pieces of advice that you could share with other leaders as they're wanting to build a strong culture,
yeah.
you know, be people-centric based on values, mm-hmm. Anything that comes to mind, kind of lessons learned, practical advice that you can share with other leaders. And that's how we'll wrap up our
yeah, session. I mean, look, I think, so first, I this may be a little naive, but I don't think like leadership has fundamentally changed because of the pandemic or because of people going in and out of offices. I think there are relative strengths that you have to emphasize and that probably matter more. Communication is clearly one of them.
Right.
Both frequency and quality, I think, probably matter more than anything. And so for me, it's about finding your own sort of true north in terms of principles around leadership and believing that those are resilient, whether you're on a Zoom call or in an office.
Okay.
And I always go back to four things that have just been, I don't know that I ever defined them until I was probably, you know, out of business school maybe and started leading businesses, but they're visceral and part of me from being a young kid when I was an Army officer. And for me, it starts with really believing in something, right? It's defining with clarity what it is that these people that you want to rub shoulders with and convince to be your teammates, what are they buying into? And it can be a lot of things, but it's about a clear strategy and a consistent message. And what is this place that they're going to spend, you know, half their lives really about?
Yeah.
And then second, I firmly think that great organizations, and it's back to that 70-30, great organizations have individuals in them who really love what they're doing. And that love is not about, I love going out after work or, you know, I love hanging out with my teammates on the weekend. It's about the engagement and the actual activity of the work that they're doing every day and yeah. finding a way to be passionate about it. And I think it's an obligation as a leader to help individuals find that love. And that may mean, you know, adjusting a role, finding a new role, finding a different team or frankly finding another place for them to work that isn't in your business, right? And and that sounds a little harsh, but I think it's true. I think that I would never want to be responsible for people being miserable at work, right? And that's that's sort of how I feel about it. I have the ability to get up excited about what I'm doing every day, and I want to help other people find that same passion. Third is a really around commitment. And look, you know, I guess commitment comes after love, right? You know, but the if you're able to give something to people that they can believe in, and you can help them love what they're doing every day, getting them to feel obligated and accountable, which is what you really want, is relatively straightforward. And so, you know, it kind of comes in sequence. If you can get those first two right, the third one's pretty easy. And then what I believe that builds in an organization is the ability of individuals to cross to being leaders. Meaning, you know, there are organizations, and I know you've seen them, where you have individuals who will watch a problem go by and go right back to what they were doing. Never it never occurred to them that they have the power to do something about it. They can collaborate and influence to bring a group of people together to help solve it. And that all that is a decision, really, to be a leader. And that being a leader has nothing to do with being a CEO or a title of any kind. Doesn't have anything to do with your budget. Doesn't have anything to do with how big a team you lead. Doesn't have anything to do with your experience. It has everything to do with a choice. Now, you can get better at it by practicing, right? Yeah. But I think fundamentally it's recognizing that you have a moment in time and an opportunity to do something, take ownership, influence other people to help you, and solve a real problem, right? And I think anybody in an organization can do that.
Yeah, I love it. So at COOLLEAF, we actually, one of our core values is everyone's a CEO.
Great.
What you're describing there.
No, it's all good.
But believing in something that's, you know, that's bigger than myself, or believing in something. It's finding that passion. You know, that you know, I love that. And then it's taking ownership or the commitment. And then, you know, empowering to be a leader. Right? So those are those big takeaways. I love it, Mike. Thank you so much for sharing with us today and just the experience. It's awesome to get to connect with you. And it's been a lot of fun. So thank you.
Thanks. I enjoyed it. Thanks. Cheers.
That wraps up another edition of The Great Retention. Thank you for joining us and being a leader who genuinely cares about recognizing and empowering the everyday hero in the team members around you. We are proud to support your leadership journey and grateful for your support of this podcast. If you haven't already, please rate the show on Apple Podcasts and share it with a friend. This helps us get this content in front of more aspiring people-first business leaders. If you'd like more perspectives on how to create exceptional cultures around award-winning talent, go to COOLLEAF.com and sign up for our newsletter to get them straight into your inbox 2 times per month. This podcast wouldn't be possible without the help from our production team at Chat with Leaders Media. Learn how you can launch your own podcast to grow your business at chatwithleaders.com. Thanks again for listening. Now go be people first leaders by celebrating and connecting your people today.
HR professionals, thanks for listening. As promised, this episode of the Great Retention Podcast is valid for 0.5 professional development credits towards SHRM CP, SHRM SCP, and HRCI recertification. To claim your SHRM credit, please visit thegreatretention.com/SHRM. To claim your HRCI credit, please visit thegreatretention.com/HRCI. Complete the 3-question form to receive your certification code. That's thegreatretention.com/SHRM and thegreatretention.com/HRCI.